Okay, appreciate everybody being with us, and some of you are with us for the first time this week. What we are going through are a series of things that we are going to that we have to cope with, and we have done coping with grief. Last night we did coping with worry and with stress. And what I've decided, or what I told you I would like to do tonight, is to have some dialogue or discussion on coping with retirement. And there are a multiplicity of ways that I can go with that, and I'm not going to be able to cover it all, you know. One of them would be just how a couple handles retirement, because that's quite a shock, not only for the one who quits working, but it's also a shock maybe for the one who's not used to having them around all the time. That's not particularly how I'm going to go. I'd put that under marriage counseling, and you can see Bob Flack for that if any of you are having any problems with that. But I want to think about it in terms of, it's a rather new phenomenon, and I'm not sure that certainly in the American culture, but even in the church, we figured out what to do with it. Now, I don't want this to at all be critical, but I do want it to be such that it stimulates our thinking. Now, some of you are retired, so you're going to say, okay, this is going to apply to me. Many of you are not retired, and you'll say, well, this doesn't have anything to do with me. Well, it does. Because probably, number one, you will retire. But, and secondly, depending on how you choose to use your retirement, that will not happen by accident. It will happen by planning. And planning a little bit earlier is usually better than planning later. And thirdly, you may be able to help those who are retired to encourage them in certain ways to be... that would be helpful to you and helpful to them. But we all make choices, and those choices set the course for our life. That's really what life is. It's a series of choices. And even the most incidental choices can have a great impact on our lives. Some of you are married to the person you're married to simply because of almost an accidental encounter. Not that you have wanted to avoid it, but a lot of people meet their mates just being at a certain place at a certain time, rather by coincidence, maybe by providence, but I think it's largely by coincidence. Christians over 50 should be the most excited, turned on, enthusiastic Christians in our congregations. Christians over 50 should be the most enthusiastic, energetic, turned on of our congregations. And I base that on the concept that they have been hearing the word the longest. They've been applying it to their lives the longest. They've been maturing for the longest period of time. So they ought to be showing the fruit of that process. It would seem to me only logical that someone who's been at it longer would have a more greater manifestation of the fruit of the Spirit. Now that is not always what we observe, but I think that a case can be made that that is probably something that we ought to think about. Oftentimes, however, those of us, and I'm in this category, over 50, we'll start to think in terms of, but I'm out of energy. I'm tired. Well, I think we need to remember that our energy as Christians comes from the Spirit, not from the calendar. Nor does it come from our body. Those of us that are older, and you put a number to that. I said 50, but I don't care what the number is. Should be the life, the joy, and the cutting edge of the church in many respects. That does not mean we don't honor and we aren't thankful and we don't need the energy and enthusiasm of the young people. But I don't think we should simply look to them and expect them to be the energy and the enthusiasm of the church. If we do, I think we're doing ourselves a disservice and we're doing them a disservice. How many times have you heard someone say, the wonderful thing about our congregation is we have so many young people? Well, that is a wonderful thing. Or maybe you will hear people say, we need some young people to get life into our congregation. I like young people. I am one of them. I am a young person. I like them. And there's a certain dynamic about our young people, and we're very blessed to have some very excellent young people in the brotherhood, in this congregation, and in your congregations. I like to speak to young people because they usually are pretty honest with me. If they're not interested in what I'm saying, they show it. So I know. Adults are a little bit better at hiding it. It makes it more difficult. So there is a dynamic with young people. But too often, our congregations maybe consist of what we would say, those are sure nice people, but they are old. Well, I like what Douglas MacArthur said about old, and basically what he said is, you're only old when you start thinking you're old. Yeah, you're going to die, but you're only old when you start thinking that you are old. So what I want to talk about this evening is the concept of retirement. And I think those of you that are retired and those who will be retiring or thinking about it, whatever, we ought to look at this as if we have won the lottery. When you retire, many times through a multiplicity of things, savings, Social Security, pensions, you're going to probably have 20 years, maybe 30 years, where you don't have to work for a living. Now, you do the math. I don't know how much money you need per year to work, but you take you take that number and multiply it by 20 or 30, and you get a pretty significant number. We've won the lottery. What I think is the question is, now what are we going to do with it? What are we going to do? Some of you that haven't yet retired will probably retire in your 50s. That's unheard of to not too many generations ago. But it's a tremendous thing. And I don't think that's at all wrong. Please do not take from this that I think that is wrong. But the concept of secular retirement is rather recent. In the last 75 to maybe 100 years. You go back much further than that, and this was as we're going to talk a little bit about its history, this was an unknown thing. I think if the early church had come up to the Apostle Paul and said, Paul, how should we spend our retirement? He'd have looked at them like a deer in headlights. That just wasn't a first century phenomenon. It wasn't a second century phenomenon. For the first 58 centuries that this earth has been in existence, retirement has not been a reality. It's only in the last one or two centuries. So you and I are faced as American Christians or Western civilization Christians with some real questions that I think deserve our consideration as we grow and as some of you retire and some of you are already retired. Do not regret. Oh shoot, I'm sorry. Do not regret growing old. It's a privilege denied to a lot of people. Don't regret growing old. It's a privilege denied to a lot of people. But it's not been denied to many of us here. Tonight I'm going to say that we need three tools, probably more than that, but I've placed three tools here that we should be considering. Number one, obviously we need the Bible. Anytime we're studying things that have spiritual implications, you don't want to do that without the Bible. Secondly, I believe we need honest minds that are truly seeking to serve the Lord. And I would like to think that is all of us, but in a group this size, that may not be all of us, and some of us may need to do some self-evaluation to make sure that we fit into there. I always remember the way Luke in his gospel talks about the parable of the sowers, and when he gets to the seed that fell on the good soil, he said they were honest seekers of the truth. Not everybody is an honest seeker of the truth, but certainly children of God are to be. And the third thing that I would say we're probably going to need are maybe some steel-toed shoes, because I don't know how to address this without probably stepping on all of our toes a little bit. That is not my primary intent, but my primary intent is to not be critical, but to get us thinking maybe in ways we haven't thought or in ways that we're not the most comfortable in thinking. And there'll be a few times during this presentation that I'm going to kind of be maybe painfully blunt, but hopefully not painfully unkind. But I'm speaking to myself as well as you, just to get us thinking about this. Really, the question, there's two questions, and they're related. The two questions I want us to consider tonight is, number one, how is your retirement, if you're retired, how is your retirement allowing you to serve God better? I think every retired Christian ought to be able to answer that question. The other question would be for those of you that aren't retired yet. How will your retirement allow you to serve the Lord better? Really the same questions, just in two different dimensions. How are we going to use it, or how are we using it to serve the Lord better? It's a tremendous, tremendous blessing. One that I'm thankful for, and those of you that are retired, I couldn't be happier for you. My wife just retired from her job of 30 years just this past month. Now she's trying to figure out how to use the next however many years she's got. And she doesn't have all those answers, and I can't give them to her. But I'm pleased that she's thinking about it. In Luke chapter 12, verse 48, the latter part of that verse, Jesus said, "To whom much is given, much will be required." Now remember the passage that I said, I think we've, in this country, won the lottery. Well, that's a wonderful thing, but will God hold me and you a little more accountable because of the opportunity that this might avail us? I'm going to take just maybe 5 minutes or so and kind of go through the history of retirement as I understand it. Secular retirement is what I'm talking about. Because as I said, this is a rather new phenomenon. And when you go through and kind of look at how it has evolved, you begin to really understand how new this is. A lot of people, at least in the Western civilization, trace it back to a German man by the name of Otto von Bismarck, who really in the 1800s began to gender up this idea of you would work until a certain age and then you would not work, and the government, in the case of Germany, would augment or give you some income so that you could continue to work and not have to worry that much about it. It wasn't by any stretch of the imagination in Europe a universal thing in the 1800s, but it gave seed to what really blossomed in America and of course now has blossomed in Europe. In America, it really took wings probably in the late 1800s. And I'm going to call that kind of a pre-industrial and a pre-retirement age, maybe from colonial times to the late 1800s. And during that period, individuals began to toy with the idea, but my great-grandparents didn't retire. Your great-grandparents probably didn't retire, unless they were just independently wealthy. They worked until they either couldn't work anymore or until they died, because that was the mindset. Work was really inseparable from life. It wasn't until just before the Civil War that industrialization firmly hit America, and as it did, it began to give rise to this concept of maybe we could retire. And again, I'm not against that. I think it's a wonderful blessing. It's what are we going to do with it? As we move on through this, up until the late 1920s, it's what was called the industrial era, and mandatory retirement began to take shape in some industries. So some of our grandparents may have retired, or great-grandparents if they lived in that area. It still wasn't a common thing. But the impact, or pardon me, the driving force for it then was not to allow old people to set and have a pension. Really, the driving force was to get the old people out of the way so young people could have their jobs. Well, what happened next was what's called the Great Depression. And during that time, that's when American secular retirement really blossomed. And it blossomed for a couple of reasons. 1935, FDR and Congress passed the Social Security Act. That was the beginning of people getting some Social Security. And some of you can probably remember maybe when that started. I have no idea how much money people got, but I suspect it was not extremely high, but it set the tone for that. Well, as I understand it, the motivation and purpose, not to take anything away from Congress and FDR at that time, was not to be generous to the old people. It was an attempt to politically get us out of the Depression. And once again, the mindset was, let's retire the old people so the young people can get the jobs and the unemployment rate will go down. That will be better for us politically. It'll be better for us at election time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that may have helped. My personal opinion is that Social Security in 1935 did not get us out of the Depression. What got us out of the Depression was World War II. But be that as it may, we eventually did come out of the Depression. The next era, which some of us can begin to remember, was, I would call it the post-war selling of retirement. And then retirement became a rather sociological thing. It became a natural order of things. Work was for the younger. And you would see TV commercials as TV came on about how older people, and they didn't have to be all that old, would be going down Route 66 with a convertible, and the woman would have a scarf on, and they are... You begin to see those old silver RVs that you see them a little bit now. Most of the RVs are a little bit different shape. But the old Airstream, I think they were called, RVs, really begin to take hold at that time. Retirement became an industry in and of itself. Financial institutions began to develop programs, annuities, immediate annuities, delayed annuities, things like that, for people to plan for their retirement. Slogans hit the TV screen and the billboards. You've earned it. AARP came into existence during this period of time. Campers, condos, Sun City, Medicare, just go on down the list, had their genesis during this period. Now we're probably in this period, and I don't know how long it's going to last. I just call it the consequences pile up. The consequences pile up. It's a wonderful concept, but somebody has to pay the bill, don't they? And you've probably heard in politics, anyone that touches Social Security, that's the third rail. You're going to die as a politician if you mess with Social Security. Well, I'm not here to mess with Social Security. But there will have to be some changes, but that's certainly not part of my lesson. For us today, I think probably you could say the average American spends their first 20 years going to school. Or they're around 20, 19, 20. Depends on how far you go before you get out of school. You then maybe spend 40 years working. You retire and you spend another 20 to 30 years retired. Now, if you add that all up, the person spent fewer years working than he did not working, if you consider your childhood through school and your retirement age. I don't think that's wrong, but we Christians have to ask, now half of our lives, some of you, are going to spend it not working. That doesn't mean you're not productive. It doesn't mean you're not good people. It's just now, what are we going to do with it? That's where I'm coming from. How will we spend it? What kind of legacy are we going to leave? Not only to our families, but to the church. What are we going to show the Lord for what we have done with this wonderful, wonderful blessing? And please, I do not begrudge anybody who has secular retirement. I think it's tremendous because it's such an opportunity. Jim McIntyre wrote a little piece entitled Sunrise Years. I'm not going to read it all for the sake of time. But he was driving down the highway that precipitated or caused him to write this little piece. And he was following a pickup or a car with a bumper sticker, or I don't know what it was. And the bumper sticker said, "Eat, sleep, and play." And he said, "When I saw that, I figured they must be retired, because that's about the only people that can do that, unless you're a little child and your parents are still taking care of you." And it was a kind of an interesting observation that he made. What about biblical retirement? Does the Bible tell us anything? Can we go to the Bible and get answers for this? Well, I think the answer is yes, but there's not a plethora of topics on it, because it was just an unknown issue in many of the cultures prior to the last 100 or so years. But let me give you a few comments about what I think the Bible does say about it that will give us some insights. In Numbers chapter 8, verses 23 through 26, is one of the few times that I think I could say that retirement in some fashion is talked about in Scripture. And it has to do with the Levites. I'm going to read those verses and then I will make a few comments on them. But in Numbers chapter 8, beginning with verse 23, "The Lord spake unto Moses, saying, This is it that belongeth unto the Levites. From 25 years old and upward, they shall go in to wait on the service of the tabernacle of the congregation. And from the age of 50, they shall cease waiting upon service thereof, and shall serve no more." So in other words, the Levites would take their turn working in the tabernacle, beginning at the age of 25 and ending at the age of 50. Well, that sounds pretty good. You know, if you can start work at 25 and retire at 50, that does have a little bit of a ring, probably for a lot of us. But obviously there's a little bit more to it, and we'll talk a little bit about that. I've wondered why God put that age restriction of 25 to 50 years old, and I don't have any more revelation on this than you do. But the setting up and the moving of the tabernacle was a very strenuous physical work. These poles, there wasn't anything easy about it. So it may have had to do with work that was no longer appropriate as a person's body got a little older. And at 50, you don't do the same physical work that you do, I guess, at the age of 25. But having said that, the Levites were not freed from serving God when they hit the age of 50. In verse 26 of that 8th chapter of Numbers, it says, when he says, "They shall serve no more," it says, "but shall serve with their brethren in the tabernacle of the congregation to keep charge, and shall do no service." In other words, their service changed. They still had spiritual work to do, but it wasn't of the physical nature that it was when they were younger. I reference that because that's one of the few references to people not working, at least even in a specific area, that I could find in the Bible. In Psalms 71, I'm going to read verses 9 and 18. They seem to have an insight into this. Psalm 71, verse 9. "Cast me not off in the time of old age. Forsake me not when my strength falleth." Now, I would say this to those of you that are younger, or certainly not maybe even near retirement age. There is a tendency for us when we're young to want to get our time in the saddle and kind of push some of the older people aside. Well, I'm all for when we're young, getting our time in the saddle, but we don't need to do that by pushing the older people aside. And here David, or the writer of this psalm, is saying, you know, don't discard me just because I'm getting old. Then in verse 18, he says, "Now also, when I am old and gray-headed, O God, forsake me not until I show my strength unto this generation and thy power to everyone that is to come." In other words, he says, God, don't discard me until I've shown the younger generation some of the things and the strength of your ways. And I think those are very, very good lessons for probably most of us. I put this statement, radical statement, because maybe you will consider this next statement to be radical. I don't know that you'll intellectually think it's radical, but you might emotionally think it's radical, but I think it's biblical. If you and I are not involved in kingdom work, we are simply too self-centered no matter what our age is. If you and I are not involved in serving the Lord, we are simply too self-centered no matter what age we are, 20 or 80, doesn't matter to me. And we never have the right as Christians to be selfish. We never have that right. We sometimes are. All of us are at some point, but we never have that right. So I think we need to challenge, at least as Christians, the American ideal of retirement. I don't challenge retirement. I'm all for it. I'm just challenging the way that maybe sometimes in the church we fall into the trap of approaching it like our culture does. And I'm not sure that's the most that we can do with it. So where does that leave a Christian today? I gave you some passages from the Old Testament. We talked a little bit about its history. But where does that leave us? This is the practical part of it. There is no real reference to it. There are some allusions, but there is no real reference to retirement in the New Testament. At least I can't find it. If you know where it is, I want you to help me, because I'd like to add it to this presentation. No one seems to have ever asked Paul about it, and I think that's because it basically did not exist in that period of time. Doesn't make it wrong. But I wonder what Paul would have said. Well, I don't know. I think he would have... He didn't live as if that was his approach. Today, retirement is deemed a Western civilization right. I consider it a great opportunity, a great blessing. I don't know that I would necessarily consider it a right. But the Bible certainly does dignify both work and age. The aged in the Bible are held in great respect, and work is held in great respect. Our culture probably doesn't hold either one of those in terribly high regard. We don't reverence the older people like some cultures do and did, and we don't reverence work as a nation like many cultures have. I'm not saying you don't, but I'm saying that is the culture that we live in. We probably, many Americans take great pride in being able to get along without having to work. They play the system. They do various things. I don't think that's the path that God has given us as Christians. I think there are some wonderful examples in the Bible and within our lifetime. Some of these names I'm going to share with you, some of you will know them, others of you may not know them, so I'll give you a little input. But these first two I hope you do know. Moses was an excellent example of an old guy doing a lot of good. He really didn't get kicked into gear till he was 80. And you say, well, they lived longer then. Okay, he didn't get kicked into gear till the last third of his life. So maybe that's 60 for us today. But God chose to use him when he was, shall we say, old. One of my favorite passages is found in Joshua chapter 14. Caleb is around 85 years old. They've been told to go into Canaan and cast out the Canaanites. And for whatever reason, there was a mountain there that the younger men, the army, had not cast out the Canaanites. And 85-year-old Caleb comes to Joshua and says, "You give me that mountain and I'll do it." I just love that. Joshua gave him the mountain and Caleb did it. You remember in the New Testament when Jesus was a baby? We have the stories in Luke chapter 2 of Simeon and Anna, both aged people. Anna certainly in her 80s, and probably he was too, if not older, there at the temple, expounding, excited, preaching about the Messiah coming. Just a wonderful, wonderful story, an example. Let me get just a little more specific, and some of you may know some of these people. Chick Smith, he's now dead, was a retired carpenter. He was born in southern Missouri, went to California, became a carpenter. He actually was a foreman on the house that Steven Spielberg built. It was fascinating to talk to Chick about working on Steven Spielberg's house that was larger than most of our homes. And he was a very talented man. He came back probably in his late 50s and went around to congregations in Missouri. And I don't know, he may have made it up to Iowa. You probably saw him at some meetings. And helped small congregations out. Don Grantham was a man that I knew from Indiana. I grew up in Indiana. Don Grantham was a postal worker. When he was a rather tall guy, his wife was rather short, but when Don and Francie Grantham retired, Don got a motor home and they just went around and preached. Don's now dead. He's probably been dead 20 years. He wasn't Billy Graham, but he was doing what he could. Maybe you know more of you know this man, Eldon Cox. His first wife died. He's remarried. Eldon now spends his time going to little congregations and preaching. And I'm sure he's been up here at some of your meetings. Maybe he's talked at some of your congregations. I don't extol them inappropriately, and they'd probably be embarrassed that I put their names up there. To me, they're just examples of how these men, at least, used their retirement. Ed Hoover, and probably, well, some of you that grew up in Indiana know Ed, as I did. So a few of you, some of the Ingalls that lived back there when Marvin and Melda were back there. Ed Hoover, he's now dead. But in 2010, he came to Vandalia during the two-week meeting and gave a Sunday afternoon talk in the middle Sunday. And his talk was on senior citizen Christians. I don't remember the title, but that's basically what it was. I went back and listened to that talk, and if you want to listen to it, it's on the Vandalia website. But I went back and listened to it, and I pulled this excerpt from it. And I'm just quoting Ed. Ed Hoover is now dead. He was about 80 or 81 when he gave this talk. He lived maybe one more year, and he's now dead. He said, "I learned in my teens how much the Bible meant to me, and I've determined I'm going to keep doing that, doing what I'm doing as long as I can. I don't run anymore. I don't burn rubber when the light turns green, but I'll probably catch you at the next red light. And I realize as we get older, we lose some of our capabilities, but I have a built-in regulator, his wife, that I have had for over 60 years. And we have talked this over several years ago, and as long as my thoughts continue as they should, we will continue." And when Ed gave that talk, he had driven 500 miles to give the talk, and he turned around and drove 500 miles to go home. Well, many of you have done that. But I just was really impressed with his attitude and his demeanor as to how he was factory worker. I think he was for either the aerospace industry or for the auto industry. I don't remember which. But he was just a common Joe like we are. But he had a mission. He had something that he could do. So that brings me to Christian retirement. I don't find any biblical principle that one should retreat or retire at a certain age, at least spiritually. For the first 58 centuries, I don't think they did it either secularly or spiritually. I don't have any problem with people that retire. I'm glad my wife has been able to. I'm glad you either have or probably will. It's just a tremendous opportunity. But even if we retire from our secular work, and most will, I don't think there's any retirement from kingdom work. And that's really my point, and it's probably where you knew I was headed. Our older years are not to be spent solely in the pursuit of pleasure. There is an interesting verse found in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 6 that I want to read for you. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, in this particular context, he's talking about widows indeed. And these would be the church supporting widows of a certain age. But I find verse 6 to be maybe an insight for me to help guide me and maybe you. It says, "She that liveth in pleasure is dead while she lives." Now what does that mean? Well, it doesn't mean if you have fun, you're spiritually dead. No. But it means if that is our primary focus, then we're dead while we live. And for a lot of people, pardon me, that has always been their primary focus. In 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 14, I'm not going to turn to read that, but it says that the children shouldn't lay up for their parents, the parents ought to lay up for their children. We'll talk a little bit more about that. I always enjoyed telling my dad that. He didn't enjoy me telling him that, so he didn't do it, which is fine. So what to do? Well, Titus chapter 2 talks about the older men teaching the younger and the older women teaching the younger. That's a what to do. In 2 Timothy chapter 1 verse 5, it talks about Timothy's mother and grandmother who had been so instrumental in developing him. Doesn't talk about those ladies like they retired. Talks about those ladies as if they continued to teach. Today it's very common for people to retire after 30 years, or maybe you were at a place where it was 80 and out, you know, combination of years service and age. And again, that's fine. I just don't find in the Bible anywhere where X sermons or X number of classes and we're out. So I will have to be honest with you. It does concern me, and it does make me wonder when maybe I'm tempted or others are tempted to say, well, I've done it. Now let's let somebody else do it. I just don't find that in the Bible, and I think we need to be very, very careful. Maybe you have done it, and many of you have done it and done it and done it. But Paul, didn't he say later in his life, "I press toward the mark"? I think that's at least what I want to keep in mind. There are people who ask me, now that Donna's retired, am I going to retire? I really don't know what to say to them. I mean, how do you retire from serving the Lord and expect the Lord to be happy with you? My health may someday cause me to slow down. Unless I die suddenly, it will. I mean, I understand that. But how do we retire from serving the Lord and then ask God to be pleased with us? These next few are maybe just some practical things for us to think about. And maybe I'm even hypersensitive to this because I spend so much of my time in these congregations that really need help. I would say probably the average size of the congregation I spend 45 of my weekends and weeks a year in are probably about, have membership of about 20. They're very small. They need some help. Well, some of the larger congregations need help too, but it's in a different sense. Opportunities here for us galore. New congregations need to be started. And please take this with all the love I can say it in. I do not get upset when congregations close their doors, because I understand that basic demographics is sometimes going to cause that to happen. What does cause me sadness is when we see congregations closing their doors and no new ones in these other demographic areas where people have moved to not popping up. Now that does cause me a grief. Not worry, just grief. And I think we need to think about that. If you are under 60, you cannot remember the last time a new congregation was established in this area. You can't. Probably if you're under 70, you can't. But you can remember ones that have closed their doors. I am not trying to be critical. I'm just trying to get us to think. Just to think. that there is work to be done, and maybe this wonderful blessing God has given us, being part of this society now of retirement and more time, is an interesting thing. Is it sinful that most of you probably have never seen a new congregation start? No, I'm not saying that, but I am saying there's an opportunity. I know it's been discussed, but it's probably never gotten too much further than that. There's work to be done just in securing the future of the congregations we have. We've probably got 4 or 5 congregations, maybe 6, but 4 or 5 different congregations represented here tonight. And all of those could use some work in securing their future. And if you're not sure what could be done, just ask one of your elders, because I bet they could give you some things that would be helpful. But you probably know them all. Again, it's just, there is so much to be done, just so much that each one of us could do. There's work to do, brothers and sisters. There is work to do, and it will only get done if we do the Lord's work. Maybe just a few words on what not to do. Withdraw. Okay. I'm old. I'm going to leave it to the younger ones. Well, that's always an option. I'm just not sure the Lord would be pleased with those of us that maybe opt for that particular option. Sometimes there's a concept that I called, for want of a better phrase, rationalized withdrawal. That's the concept, well, I've done it. Now it's somebody else's time. And this is, please, this is not an Iowa problem any more than any other place. I hear it many, many places I go. Well, I've done it. Let the younger ones do it. Well, what about I've done it? Let me do it with the younger ones. That seems to me to be probably a good approach to take. You hear phrases like, I've done it. You hear phrases like, I can't. You hear phrases like, let the younger ones do it. I think we need to be rather careful about those phrases. In Hebrews chapter 5, verse 12, it says, For when the time ye ought to be teachers, you have need that one teach you again, which is the first principle of the oracles of God. What he was saying there is, brothers and sisters, you should be more grown up. Well, I'm not saying that to you, but you can say it to yourself if it applies. So we just need to be careful. So I guess some of the questions that I'm left with, and I'm not going to leave, not because I don't want to, I'm probably not going to leave a whole lot of time for discussion. But I wanted to talk a little bit too about our estate and the Lord. Someone in the last week said, talking to me about estate planning, I said, well, I got a plan, I just don't have an estate. But most of us do have some estates of varying degrees. I would encourage all of you to have your estate in order. Wills, living wills, power of attorneys. That's not my topic tonight, but those are important things in our demeanor. But have you ever thought about leaving a significant part of your estate to the Lord's work? You ever thought about doing that? Am I saying it's wrong to leave it to our children? No, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying, have you ever thought about it? There's an interesting verse in Proverbs chapter 20, verse 21. An inheritance gained hastily at the beginning will not be blessed at the end. Anybody want to tell me what that means? Well, there's a couple of ways to look at it. It could be if you did win the lottery, and I don't want you to because that means you had to play it. But if you came into a lot of wealth instantly, there'd be a lot of stress in what to do with it. But I think it also carries the idea of when we get things that we haven't had to work for, sometimes the result of that's not as blessed as we would like for it to do. I'm not up here saying don't leave it to your kids, leave it to your family, and if you're the kids, don't get mad at me, they'll still leave you some. I'm just saying, have you ever thought about doing that? Have you ever thought about doing that? Some of us are going to be at Eminence next week. I think that has a lot of pluses. And maybe I shouldn't think this way, but I go around there and start counting up all those RVs and trailers and doing the math and think, wow, that's put a lot of men in the field. I don't need it. I don't want it. I'm not asking for that. I'm just saying, and it's not wrong to do that. That's not what I'm saying. We are just so blessed. We are so blessed. What about your health? Are you prepared? Not just are you prepared to die, are you prepared for others as your estate? There was a proverb, I think it was a Norwegian proverb, and Carl Sandburg made it famous when he used it in a biography of Abraham Lincoln. And some of you have probably heard me use this phrase in some of the funerals I've done. A tree is best measured when it's down. And what it means is, it's after we're gone that people can probably really assess us best. The problem with that is, once the tree's down, it's too late to change it. Once we die, we can't make any of those changes. We can't serve the Lord with whatever great intentions. There was a couple in the Kansas City area, he's still alive, she's not, that just had wonderful plans as to what they were going to do when they retired. But their health didn't last. And so they weren't able to do a lot of them. So those of you that are younger, don't assume that you're going to live to 90 with good health. You may actually need to do some of the work for the Lord before then, even before you retire. I don't think that's a place. I'm not even sure it's a word. But I just called it Leisureville. I love leisure. I love to recreate. I love to have fun. If you don't know that, you don't know me. So I am not against that at all. I probably am somewhat addicted to it, to an excess. So if that's a confession before we've actually extended the gospel invitation, so be it. But I hope that's really not our mindset as we proceed through life. To those of you that are younger, don't let those of us that are older retire spiritually. Keep asking us questions. Keep prodding us. Keep making sure that you tell us that you need us. Because we will probably get a little slothful if you don't. I'm back to Psalms chapter 71, verse 18. Now also, when I am old and gray-headed, O God, forsake me not until I have showed your strength unto this generation and thy power to everyone who comes. I will pause. We've got 5 or 10 minutes. If anybody wants to make a comment or ask a question, I know I've just kind of... Remember Sunday night I quoted from the Johnny Mercer song, Fools Rush In Where Angels Dare to Tread. That's probably what I just did tonight. It's not the most comfortable topic for us to talk about. I've just never heard anybody talk about it. So I guess I felt maybe it would be good for me to at least bring it up. Not to make anybody feel guilty. I want you to enjoy your retirement. I think it's fine to take trips. Donna and I hope to do some of that. I'm just saying, there is a priority element that we need to keep in mind. That's about what I thought I'd get. I just ask you to think about it, I guess. Greg?
I noticed you didn't talk about the third option.
About what?
I noticed you didn't talk about the third option, which is don't retire at all.
Okay,
there's a foregone conclusion in our society that when you hit a certain age, you retire.
Yeah.
It's a bad foregone conclusion. I can tell you, I write a lot of prescriptions for people on antidepressants and anti-anxiety that should have never retired. Shouldn't have ever retired, at least without more preparation.
Okay. What he said I guess you heard that, it was on the tape, that maybe some people shouldn't retire. Well, that's probably true. If I differed with that at all, and I don't differ with that significantly, that energy could be channeled into serving the Lord when we don't need the financial impact. I know a lot of people who retire and then go back and get jobs, not because they need the money, they just need something to do. And I guess I'm saying, if I don't need the money, then let me do something for the Lord that doesn't have a lot of money involved. But certainly sitting in our rocking chair is a good way to die early. I think we would all probably agree with that. I'm just having fun watching your faces. I don't know exactly why. But I probably wouldn't say too much if I was sitting out there either, even if I was still awake.
This doesn't have anything to do with retirement, but I thought I would reiterate what John said. When our family had to make a decision to remove life support from Betty, the best gift she gave us was a living will that explicitly said what Betty wanted. And it would have been an extremely difficult decision had that not been in place. And as soon as that took place, I went home to my own parents and said, do this for me today. So I just strongly encourage everyone, even if you have children that are, you know, teenagers or younger, to make sure that you are planned, because when, you know, we don't know what tomorrow brings, and money can make families weird, and property can make families weird, and you'd like to think that everybody gets along when you're no longer here, but that isn't always the case. But when you plan it out and you say exactly how you want things to go, it makes it so much more, run more smoothly, and allows your family to, you know, continue to be spiritual and to keep those things in perspective and to remove that secular portion of what comes with death and property.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I just barely touched on it, but there's not a verse that says you have to do this, but if you do not have a will or a living will or a power of attorney, and you want to have a durable power of attorney, and you can look that up if you don't know what that is, please do it. My mom is having heart surgery in the morning, and so I get a call this morning from Donna, where's the power of attorney papers? Where's the living will? And so I was able to tell her, and she took it up there, and that'll be fine. She'll be fine. But you just never know when these things happen. And it's just good stewardship of our resources when we have that. Be prepared to pay the lawyer when you do it, but Allison is completely right. I have had to adjudicate several family arguments, battles, civil wars over inheritances. And it doesn't take a lot of money to make people silly. It doesn't take a lot of money. But in this audience, there's a lot of money. I go to congregations where there are probably at least 5 to 10 millionaires in the congregation. They don't know they're millionaires because it's all tied up in land or assets, but they are. That's a lot of money. I mean, it is to me. Anything that's over 3 digits is a lot of money to me. So we're just so blessed, but with it comes responsibility. Okay, I can bring the kids up anytime. Does anybody have anything else you would like to say? Please, I am not being critical. We all struggle with these things. I'm not saying don't retire. I'm not saying don't have fun. I'm just saying let's just understand it is a tremendous opportunity for all of the talent that is assembled in an assembly like this to work for the Lord and to be generous. Junior?
Retirement is wonderful. Be prepared. But it is wonderful.
Okay. That's by the man that made my wife get 100 and some cards so that she would retire. And she still has every one of them. But that was Donna's biggest trepidation, was now what can I do that's productive? She'll find something. She'll find something. Knowing her, she'll probably gravitate toward hospice and working with some of the young people in the church. But different people gravitate different ways. Bruce,
I would like to see or hear some things about retirement where people are mobile, and either what their elders will say about it or what evangelists would say about it, how they handle that issue, because I've heard of people who have gotten, you know, in, there's been concern, let's say, about people that don't stay at their home congregation for X amount of time or aren't reportable, I guess, back to their elders or whatever. And I'd like to hear a little something about that, whether it's in the gospel news or whether there's something that maybe we can pick up at a specific meeting, or maybe the elders need to, you know, put more out there on what their feelings are on it.
Sounds to me like a good Labor Day topic for somebody else.
I knew you'd say that.
Yeah. I am scheduled to write the August article in Gospel Message, and it will be on retirement. I just haven't written it yet. It probably won't address your specific questions. I just think people need to start thinking. What got me thinking about this was a congregation in Indiana asked me to talk about this. And I spent a little more time than I have with you, and I had never really considered it. And they're not having a trouble with it. They were just saying, hey, are we using the blessings the Lord's given us the way the Lord would want us to? Your question is tied to this, but we don't have, seriously, probably don't have time to go into that. To me, a lot of it has to do with one's motive for the travel, and it also has to do with the time and the duration. But it is difficult to support your home congregation maybe as well as you could if you're gone 50% of the time. I mean, away from it. 50, but I'm not saying it's impossible. I just don't. But you could be helping another congregation somewhere else. You know, if you guys want to go spend the winter in Phoenix, I got a congregation that would love to have your help. It's called Union Hills. They just are such a wonderful group of people. If you want to go someplace, there's places that you can still do the Lord's work. It's not something our forefathers had to really deal with because they didn't retire. Grandpa and Grandpa were out there, Grandma were out there in the garden and digging potatoes till about the year they died. We don't do that anymore. I mean, maybe someone here does, but in general, we don't do that anymore. And that's fine. Just what are we going to do with it? That's what I keep asking myself. I'm still waiting for the kids. If you're young and think, man, retirement's a long ways away, it may be, but you won't be able to do some of these things for the Lord if you don't start planning now. You're not going to be able to do this if you wait until you're 60 to start putting your financial package in order. And you've probably all seen the charts. If you start putting a little bit away when you're 25, by the time you're 60, you'll very likely be able to be financially in a position to do some of these things without having to worry about the money. I guess that's what I'll say. Come on in, guys.